So today, Jasper and JD, John and Jennifer, were all parents in this research. There was 12 sets of parents of special needs children. And so we have a representation today. And our goal today is really to let them speak a little bit about some of the practices that work for them as parents in this situation. We call it best practices. And best practices are something that we can talk about and then begin to share with other people to try, possibly in their home or in their situation, or adapt the practice in a certain way to fit their context. So this little workshop is really about solutions, and we certainly would like to hear some of your thoughts as well as we get into the dialogue part of this. But first, we want to let the parents speak to us a little bit, and I think the best way, we'll try this, we'll let Jasper, we'll let you go first, and he'll speak, and probably what might be good is then we'll see if there's any questions that get stimulated right away out of what Jasper has to say, and spend a little time with that, then we'll go to JD and Jennifer. And they like to tag team and get their ideas off each other, so they're going to speak a little bit about what has worked for them and their family. Then again, we would have any questions that you have from them that get stimulated there. Hopefully we just have some pretty informal dialogue here about what can work and what are some of the solutions. A lot of times with this issue, people get stuck on problems. We just keep going over problems and not moving to what can really work and what's helping and how do parents best cope in the situation. Okay? So Jasper, the floor is all yours. We'll get the camera on you.
My name is Jasper Schellingerhout, and I'll be, while I'm talking, I'll talk about my wife too. Her name's Roxanne, so if you hear Roxanne, you know who I'm speaking about. I'm pretty much an introvert, so public speaking is not my big thing. My wife Roxanne is an extrovert, and I call her a change agent, because when she talks to people, she enacts change at church and with friends. For some reason, she yields a lot of influence over people in just talking with them, listening to them, and enacting change with in their lives, or making them think about things differently. I, on the other hand, think more about things. I tend to read up, study, you know, think of, you know, contemplate. But I think I'll start with talking about an example that really opened my eyes. I was talking with Roxanne's mother one time about, I don't know how the topic came on breastfeeding, but we talked with their mother-in-law about breastfeeding anyway. But she said that when her children were born, they thought that formula was made by experts and therefore was nutritionally better for their children than breast milk. And now, of course, today we know that that was a complete lie. And I realized that, you know, it's very easy for us to surrender to experts. It's sometimes the easiest thing to do, because it relieves a burden of us. That we don't have to make those choices and things. And, you know, for instance, you know, when my son has high functioning autism, you go to the doctor the first time and with the diagnosis, and they give you these vague things that you could do. You could try this, you could try that, or you know, some people say this may work, but then you realize, well, my expert is not giving me something concrete. And you know, and later I realized I didn't really want something concrete anyway, because I didn't want them to tell me what I should do anyway. But I think the best way to go through this is to start from the beginning and tell the story of my son. And it's a story of success, and I realized that a lot of parents are struggling and maybe not have successes. So it may be painful to hear the story of success from another parent. But I hope you can take away at least some things that worked for us and that you can maybe use. When Kurt was very little, we realized something was not right. He lined up his toys. He kept his little finger and made sure that things were lined up. He would spin and he would flap his hands. And later when we would talk to him, he would have echolalic speech. He would echo back what we would say to him, and we realized something was not right. And the first person to raise something was my mother. She said, have you considered that Kurt may have autism? And my first reaction was like, no, he's very emotional. He loves us, he attaches, he smiles, he's a happy child. And of course, my preconceived ideas of autism was completely wrong. I thought a child with autism is unemotional. And made me realize that we have these ideas about some of these disabilities that can be completely wrong. You know, and I mentioned that when we went to the doctors, they gave only these vague things, you know, maybe this treatment will work or this, or some people say this might work, and I'm like, what do I do? What do I do? So the first thing I did is I started reading. And of course, like I guess most parents, I decided, okay, I will do the generally accepted medical treatment that they say works. And at that would be what they call applied behavioral modification, where they condition the child with autism to respond in a certain way to certain situations or to certain verbal prompts that would respond in a certain way. And we put Kurt in a school that was dedicated to do this type of treatment. And it was very expensive. It cost $24,000 a year. But in the state of Ohio, through the Department of Education, there is an autism scholarship which paid for $20,000. So treatment was $20,000 got you 3 days a week, 3 hours a day. So the treatment is very expensive. But things were not working. This generally accepted treatment did not work for us. Yes, he responded. You know, he would do certain things that he didn't do before. But there was something missing, something lacking. And one of Roxanne's friends, who also had a child, an adopted child with autism, told her of another treatment she was doing, called relational developmental intervention. And she had this great testimony of how much her child has improved on this. And initially I'm like, no, this is not generally medically accepted. You know, why would we go with something that, you know, just is outside of the medical, you know, little box that, you know, we generally accept. So eventually I was like, let's look at this, let's at least read about it. And I read a little bit about it, and I'm like, well, what we do now is not really working. So we got someone to work with us while Kirk was still doing this other treatment, and things were not working, not on this new program either. So Roxanne met with other parents that do the same program, and she found that there was huge discrepancies between the treatment that he received and what they received. She's like, something is wrong. And it turned out that the consultant we were using lied to us, and that she was not actively trained in this treatment and was not actively involved in the program. So we had to get rid of her, and we got a second consultant that did this treatment. And again, we had problems. We would submit something. This program works as follows. It's essentially, I would say, a mentorship program. They give us tiny little things that we have to accomplish with the child, little steps, little things that we need to progress in the development of the child. It's a remedial program where you do only the next little step that the child needs to accomplish. But they don't tell you how to do it. The step is always just a little bit beyond the previous step, and the role of your consultant is to mentor you into successfully getting your child to master that next little step. So it's like baby little steps that you have to accomplish. So every time we do that, we submit a video or a textual feedback, and we expect a response for them to help us. Well, we had a turnaround time of several weeks with this other consultant, and it turned out that this was not working with us. So we had to fire another expert, and firing an expert is very difficult. People develop relationships with the people that they consult with, whether it's a psychologist, a speech therapist, or any program, and it's very hard to let go of those relationships. It's like, for some people, it's like getting rid of a friend. Well, we kind of got over that. If a consultant does not work for you, get another consultant, and you know, you keep it short and formal, and the relationship can be severed. But it's not easy. I mean, you have a lot of doubts. Will I find somebody else? Will the next person be good? I mean, we had one bad consultant, then we had another bad consultant. Will we have a third bad consultant? Can we keep going like this? Well, our third consultant was wonderful. Wonderful. She had a turnaround time of less than a day when we submitted something. She helped us in this mentorship program, and Kurt improved dramatically in this program. We did so much better. So I think, and I got a million more things to talk about, but I think the bottom line was, you know, initially I had my doubts about something, and we tried it and it worked. Well, initially it didn't work, we had bad consultants, but sometimes you have to realize that if something bugs you, if you think something's not right with this person helping you, talk with other people that are doing this treatment. Is this person doing what they're supposed to do? Is it working? Why is it not working? Why is it working for somebody else? You know, we've tried other treatments too. For instance, we tried certain dietary treatments. For instance, we went gluten-free. Later we found out that Kirk actually has a gluten allergy, and you know, it was a good thing we took him off gluten. But in the first few weeks that we took him off gluten, he really had a hard time. His behavior was very, very difficult. And we got beyond that, and he did very well. But on some other things that we had to try, where we had to go through this difficult period, it got too hard and we gave up. For instance, we put him on nystatin for yeast in his gut, and he got very sick. He got pale, he was gray under the eyes, and after a month I said, Is the cure worse than, is the treatment worse than the disease? He looks sick, he looks weak, he looks tired. I don't know how much longer, and you know, we talked to the doctor, and they keep telling us, just try it a little bit longer. So, you know, there is a tolerance for how much you can take with a certain treatment before you say, no, I can't do this. So we gave up on some certain treatments, but some you had to persevere through. But I think in the end, what I realized is that no one knows the child better than the parent. You know, there's experts, and you know, they study in a certain field, but sometimes talking with your friends and finding out from friends or a support group with other people, where they have a testimony of something that works for their child, I almost think that carries more weight for me than something that's a case study. where you just see numbers. If you can see the child, meet the child, and see that the child is actually improved, you know, that gives you hope. And that's what we saw with our friends' children, and that's what we saw with our own child.
Thank you, Jasper.
Question for Jasper?
Yeah.
What was the process you used to find a new consultant? I mean, what image is it? Are you going online? Are you talking to friends?
Friends.
Social.
How is your consultant? What's the turnaround time?
Gotcha.
What's your results?
So word of mouth.
It goes back to results. Did it work for your child?
And that's a very important, I think, dynamic that we learned with the research to help parents of special needs children connect to networks that can be helpful so they can trade information. We're looking at possibly doing like a chat room kind of a situation because you might want to tell us a little bit more. How did you learn about other parents with this? How did you know to ask and who to ask? How did you go about that? Did it take time? How did that happen?
It was one of my wife's friends from actually a sister of a high school friend of my wife. Mm. And you know, often it's incidental. You meet somebody, you talk, you find out somebody else has a job, the same diagnosis. And then you have a point that ties you into a network of other people. Right. So friends, family, you know, contacts, will get you that entry point into a network of other people.
Right. Yes, ma'am.
This may sound cynical, but I'm wondering if you have a big network. I have tried to network, and I think some parents lose their identity in their child's illness, and that's not attractive to me. I think the goal is to, our son who is severely disabled is part of our life. It is not our life. The disease is not our life. I find it very difficult, and I've met some people already that I would not characterize that way here today, so I'm very thankful. But I find it difficult. It's almost like there's a competition with some parents that I don't want to win about, well, we had to go to the hospital, well, this is what we've won. I found that very difficult. Is there any advice you have to get plugged in or separate yourself from the wrong kind of relationships?
I wish my wife were here. She's the one who really goes to these support groups and network with other people. And but I know, for instance, with their group, they try and not talk about their complaints. You know, nobody wants to hear other people complain because it doesn't help anybody. They want to know what works.
Right.
You know, what works? And I think if you can get a group and say, you know, let's just talk about what works. You know, of course, you will always have that one or two parents that mm-hmm. have to vent, have to, you know, get, you know, they need some, you know, need to have others feel a little bit of sympathy for them. And I think, you know, sometimes they need that, you know. You need somebody to feel sorry for them occasionally. But when you're in these support groups, they need to be support groups, not commiserating groups.
One thing we do in that same vein, and it's on purpose and yet not specifically for the reason that you mentioned, but we really try to maintain our friends that have typical children and then our special needs friends. And I would say that we're probably more so friends with the typical children parents because we go to church together and we have like interests and that sort of thing. But we very much purposely maintain either we have a play group that we met through where we do therapy and they meet one Saturday a month and we try to participate in things like this almost for selfish reasons as much as we do want to help, but we also want to surround ourselves. But we had to start saying, you know, it takes time, and that's another thing where the networking comes in. We don't meet anybody who mentions that they have a special needs child or that they know even a couple that has a special needs child that we don't ask them, well, who's their babysitter? Because you never know when you stumble onto somebody, and we've had a couple of good high school, college age girls who are either majoring in something having to do with special needs, so they're more than welcome to have a child with disabilities because it helps them do their schooling. And we've even had a couple of siblings that, you know, they have a baby brother or baby sister with Down syndrome or something like that. So they're familiar with the quirks and that sort of thing. But we have found that if we don't, you know, we'll spend a year looking for a babysitter with all the excuses of why we don't have one, but then we realize we've gone a whole year without talking, really. And, you know, you talk in the car until they start screaming or, you know. But all the conversations that take place, if you can get away, are really your planning. You're replenishing yourself, but also you're planning for what you're going to do. I mean, we just now got a will and trust and all that kind of stuff completed, which took a whole year, but it took a whole year because it took us that many times to find babysitters so that we could go to the lawyer's office together, because the kids would completely destroy the lawyer's office if we were to take them with us. So, but little things like that, and even when it comes to finding a babysitter, if you don't ever have time to communicate or time to talk, then that never gets done, and it's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy or a circle. But so definitely take that time. And time away can take many facets to time away together, which we don't get enough of, but trying to help each other have time alone, even individually, or if we choose to spend that time individually with friends. Because a lot of things, I don't know how many of you were in the chapel for the previous segment, but some of the things she said about just talking to somebody about something seems to diffuse things a little bit. And sometimes when we're trying to talk about it, we start to either point blame or, you know, what we're not doing right. I'm bad about pointing out everything that we're not doing right, and then she takes that personally, even though maybe I don't mean it personally, and then that causes a whole other need for a babysitter. So sometimes the having a babysitter is try to get it and then go our separate ways, and whether that's for her going to the grocery store or going to Starbucks and just talking to a friend. And it can be talking about the problems at home, or it can be completely not talking about the problems at home. It's amazing how much that can rejuvenate us a little bit.
I was just going to say, on that note, like you're saying, there's so many levels to that. There's getting away by ourselves, and then there's getting away together, and then getting away and talking to friends, and then we've gotten away and talked to counselors and therapists, and especially participating in this study. And when you're just talking and you have just somebody there listening, you start to say things that you didn't even know you thought, or you didn't even know were in your heart, and then you start to process, and that's how we found we've kind of moved along and been able to, kind of come to deal with each step of the process and acceptance of the process as you're talking. And sometimes we're answering our own questions with what we're saying just by having someone there to listen. So,
and that was one great thing about this study is they came to our house after the kids were in bed, because they recognized that if we had to go downtown to their office, that was never going to happen. And don't misunderstand, like, we've got this thing down, because still we get a date night like every 3 months or something like that. So we're nowhere near. As soon as you get one babysitter kind of brought up, then you lose them for whatever reason. Either they go to college or they're done with college or whatever. So we by no means have this perfected. But use the, even like the maybe the friends who annoy you, don't give up that opportunity. If finding care is a problem for you, don't bypass that opportunity to, in a sense, be selfish or be greedy or take care of yourself, which is unfortunately how I have a problem looking at it that way, and I have to adjust my thinking. But you know, if you're going to go somewhere and you know it's going to be uncomfortable, but you're going to be around special needs families, get everything you can out of that gathering. And that's kind of how we approached this survey was, you know, they were trying to get all this information out of us. We were really participating, hoping that we were going to get a ton of information out of it, whether it be psychological, spiritual, or babysitting, or, you know, how do you get a waiver from Medicare, or how do you get therapy, or are there people out there? And don't feel bad about if that's not necessarily your cup of tea. At least get what you can out of it, because there's not that many of those situations that you find yourself in.
And some places that we didn't know to look for babysitters that are helpful is like posting on the University of Cincinnati website in, what was the Christian university that we posted on there?
Cincinnati Christian,
posting on their web boards for babysitters, and then you'll get people that are majoring in, you know, maybe speech pathology or you know, along those lines, and then they're working on that in school. So it's a level of comfort that you can have with those. And we have found another babysitter through a friend that's going to be a nurse, and she's senior in high school, but she's already taking college courses, and she's already done a nursing internship. So just things like that are helpful from schools, you know, finding what you can on schools for babysitting. So.
And I think another thing we found, depending on your child's level of medical needs, because there's behavioral and then there's medical. And medical takes on a whole nother, you know, if your child has seizures or things along that line, obviously you want to be careful. But another thing I think we kind of found is we were being too protective. You know, we had to have the absolute perfect person because Ethan was so different or Ethan was so difficult. And what we've actually found is Ethan is very difficult with us. But if you go back there and look at him back there, he's having a ball and he doesn't give them any trouble other than ripping, trying to rip everything off the walls or off the shelves, or, you know, that's his idea of fun. But as long as they stay on top of him, he's completely fine. He's not screaming and he doesn't keep them up all night and all the things that we're thinking of when we think we've got to have, you know, a PhD medical doctor or otherwise we can't go out to dinner. And that's not the case, and it's taken us 6 years to figure that out, because you're always looking, you always think of your kid, or at least we always think of our child in a lot worse terms than what other people do, and we're so worried about other people's judgment that then we kind of internalize that. So, and again, it's an emotional roller coaster. But so for those of you maybe that have children, or you're here because you know somebody who has children, that the medical side isn't life-threatening, or that, you know, it's not they're needing shots or medication or that the breathing machines or that sort of thing, maybe take a step back and say, are we being too picky about, you know, maybe the junior high girl down the street kid come do it for a couple hours, you know, or maybe you need to invest some time in them. They're more than capable. But and we always put off investing the time, and we've learned that it's a lot easier to, even if you got to pay them, which that's a whole other story, just having to pay them, but even if you got to pay them to come over for whatever your typical outing's going to be, 2, 3, 4 hours, get them over there and let them do a whole 3 or 4 hour stint with you there. But at the, you know, if it's something, if your goal is to go out to dinner once a month with your spouse, and you find somebody who you think's maybe borderline, but they're more than willing, if it's a family member or a friend of a family member, maybe you don't even know them, say, look, why don't you come over from 6 to 10, if that's when you think you're going to do your dinner or whatever, while we're here, and go through the whole, you know, this is how you put them to bed, this is how you do that. Because we all know, we're just writing it down on a piece of paper, half of it doesn't get done. So that's what we would suggest.
And I'm just going to say, kind of in a nutshell, all of that to say that we've noticed, not with just Ethan, but with our daughter too, that when we're just reactive and not proactive in terms of our relationship and our family, they don't function as well and they don't feel the security. And when we invest, no matter how exhausting it is, which even saying that now, it's easy to say, but when I'm exhausted, it's so not easy to do. But even when we're exhausted, just to go ahead and put the time into finding the babysitter and going out, you know, sometimes I don't even feel like getting dressed to go anywhere, but just doing that and maintaining our relationship, the kids thrive so much better in that. So it's kind of the reason that we do that.
So it sounds like there's at times keeping your motivation going, mm-hmm. to have respite care, to take care of yourself, mm-hmm. And find ways to have a good time when it works, than to remember that the next time when you're not as motivated to do it.
Yes, and that's, you know, kind of what encourages you to
sustain that stuff. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And sometimes we do actually have to approach it as a job. I mean, we have to pick something way out, like, mm-hmm. because I travel all the time, you know, I've got airline points and hotel points and all that, mm-hmm. but it's kind of ironic that now that I have all that stuff, we know we have a situation where we can't just take off and have any old, you know, have grandma come keep the kids for a week so that we can take advantage of all these quote free you know, things that we could. And so, but sometimes it's something like that. We'll get to talking and we'll say, okay, we're going to go to X for, I've got a trade show coming up. We did, a few years ago, we broke down and we did, I had a trade show in Toronto. I said, okay, you're going to come up as early a flight as you can get one day and come back home on as late a flight as you can the next day. I had to go up there to set up the booth and everything anyway. So it was, it was only technically one day, but it was the first time that we had actually done that. And we had a babysitter who had a brother with autism, and so she had been really good. She was only in high school, which, you know, 2 years ago, if you'd have said, would you leave your kids overnight with a high school kid, we would have always said no. But we were at a point in our marriage where we were like, we got to start doing something, because this isn't going to last, or it's not going to work.
Yeah. So it takes courage.
Sometimes you got to take a chance.
Yeah, take that risk.
And they were fine.
Questions for Jennifer and JD?
I'm curious if there are professional for-profit groups that offer respite care for children.
There are quite a few places that we've just seen bits and pieces of. We put Ethan in a little day camp last summer down at Stepping Stones in Indian Hill or Montgomery, down there in that area. And we noticed he just went to the day camp. But we saw in their literature that they offer it, maybe for older kids, I don't know if it's younger kids or not, but they do offer, like if you want to go on vacation, you can leave your child there. I mean, they have overnight facilities. They have some, I think, more adults who live there year round. Mm-hmm. But they actually do offer things like that. But I don't know if that's really for younger kids or not. But that's something that I believe, and Steve, correct me if I'm wrong, we're hoping that what Sweeten hopes to do kind of in a second or third phase of all of this stuff is kind of take what we've told them and almost become a clearinghouse, for lack of a better term. And the way I've explained it to other people is, we've got a friend who's a self-employed plumber. He's a one-man show. But I assume, I haven't actually talked to him about it, but I assume Steve would have no problem coming and fixing your plumbing for free, because you're the mother of a special needs child and he knows that's a difficult life, and et cetera, et cetera. He has no problem coming and fixing your plumbing for free if you were to need, you had something backed up and for whatever reason. But he doesn't know that you exist. And you may be sitting at home saying, I don't have money to come play a plumber and this is broken. And so, but you don't know any plumbers who have that time and or willingness to. And what I think and that could be babysitting, plumbing, raking your yard, mowing your yard, raking your leaves, cleaning up the house, fit repairs around the house, whatever it is. But I think they're hoping to take all of this information now that they've gathered 10 or 12 needs and find a way to supply that to the community, whether that be through churches and nonprofits or even for-profits, but sort of for example, a plumber who says, I've got Friday afternoon available, I want to go help a single mom, or I want to go help a parent with a disability or an adult with a disability, but somehow you've got to say, my toilet's backed up, and put that somewhere that someone who says, I know how to unplug a toilet, knows where you live. And so, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that's sort of
well said.
What this whole thing is pointed at.
That's what we're going to be trying to do.
Stepping Stones does provide respite, and dependent on the severity of the needs, so does St. Joseph Home and Blue Ash.
Okay.
And then there's nurses, my children have disabilities also, that you can call. But then you're talking, average $25-$30 an hour. Mm. It makes, then you have to go to dinner at White Castle's.
Why are you still getting out?
Sometimes White Castle's tastes really good. So that kind of stuff. But then there are other things. There's churches that provide respite sometimes twice a year.
That's something we haven't taken advantage of as much as we should.
Vineyard
but
does that.
I know we got Vineyard, and I think this church, and our church doesn't do it as regularly. But even if some of them do it, I think, once a month. Mm-hmm. But even if other ones, if you could go find six churches and sort of familiarize yourself to where throughout the course of a year, that's 10 or 12 nights you could get out. And it's completely free. And as you could tell when you check the kids in here, if you brought your kids, the ones who really decide they're going to be good at this are really good at it. So we have problems accepting help to begin with. That's just kind of our personality. So, and that's something that even our typical kids' friends, we try to do things like that with them, but they won't ever come out and say it. But what happens all the time is they're more than willing to take our kids, but then they never reciprocate. They say, oh yeah, we're going to keep, we'll keep your kids, and then you can keep our kids next weekend, and next weekend never comes. And so once you do that two or three times, you kind of stop asking because, come on, let me. And it's not, some of these are very, very good friends of ours. It's not at all like they don't trust us.
They
see us and say, they don't want our kids. They got enough issues with their own kids.
So we've gotten to where if someone says, we'll watch your kids, we say, okay, get your calendar out and let's put a date on there where we can watch your kids, because we're going to demand to reciprocate.
And our problem, too, has been that just because we moved here, we started going to Hope Church. Almost all of our friends are in this Mason area, and we're on the outskirts of Liberty Township. So that's fine on some occasions, but like you say, when you're just wanting to go to the grocery store, it takes us 40 minutes to come over here and drop the kids off. You know, you run to Kroger's for an hour, and then there's another 40 minutes. So we don't get that as much as we would be able to. But that is a good, whether it's other special needs families or typical families, but you really feel that need of reciprocation. So that you feel like we're actually sharing this. We're not appearing needy and asking for that. Mm-hmm.
Jasper, you want to make a point before we...
Yes, a little bit different topic, something I realized, another thing that works for us. Medical insurance. Like I said, sometimes you especially when you talk to friends, you want to do something that's non-standard, something that's maybe not covered or going outside the bounds of generally accepted. And medical aid won't cover it. Maybe your Medicaid waiver won't even cover it. What we found is it was actually to our benefit for us to have my wife and our children self-insured rather than having them on my company insurance. It was actually cheaper, however that can happen, even with the same company with a similar policy. And using a medical savings account, because then you go to what the tax law says is a deductible medical expense, and it's pretty much more open than the requirements of a medical insurance. For instance, a medical insurance may not cover, say, eczema treatment because the exact method of interaction with your skin is not documented, and they say, since it's not been researched, there's no scientific method to why it works, we won't cover it. Well, if your health savings account, you pay that, you can get at least the tax deduction use your health savings account. So what we did is actually the differential in premiums, because when you have a high deductible medical insurance, your premiums are lower, and you can put the differential in a savings account. What we found is that we could go to doctors that do treatments that are, you know, doctors that specialize in a certain field that are on no medical insurance. They don't take medical insurance. They take only cash. Mm-hmm. Or you can do treatments that you decide. So it's your cash in your account, and no insurance company tells you how you can spend it. And even if you can't take a tax deduction, you've saved that money to pay for it. And that brings me to another point that the person was talking about, social justice in the other room. And I'm very cautious because, for instance, I know with autism treatment, there's only one treatment that is generally accepted as working. And if that goes into a government program or something, that will be the only treatment that will get covered. We tried that treatment. It didn't work for us. We are doing something that is not generally accepted. So, you know, it's a double-edged sword, you know. Especially when you go outside the norm, you know. Mm-hmm. It may not be covered, or if you're on Medicare, only what they approve or what your insurance will approve will get covered. Mm-hmm. But if you have your own cash, you know. So that worked for us. But rather putting aside, paying lower premiums and putting money aside and paying what we think was worth it.
Okay. Well, and the financial part is a big part of this. I know we heard that a lot from parents, and there's needs to be a lot more solutions in that area too. Well, thank you. I wanted to thank you. We need to wrap it up. Thank you for your participation. I think what we did here this morning is a little microcosm or a model of how do we build this and amplify this, so that parents have ways to give voice to different needs and then look for and hear from other parents that have had some solutions that you don't know. We need to figure out how to match that up. How can we get churches involved to offer and to figure out how to do respite care as a ministry, as a service, or to even have, many of our churches have lay peer counseling where there's a place to go and just talk a little bit and vent a little bit and deal with the emotional sides of it. So I appreciate your participation. Thank you again, parents, for being able to share what you guys have been through. And keep in touch with Sweet and Life Systems. We try to build and amplify on the little experience that we've had here and trying to build a community on this. But I will direct you back to the chapel. I think we're going to just end there from 12 to 12:30. So thanks again.